Thank you. I'm Patty. I'm an alcoholic. Grateful to be sober. I'm grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to thank Dave and the committee for inviting me and offering me an opportunity to participate in my recovery. I feel like I should make something disappear or something up here. Or at least come dancing out on these tables right there. I used to do that, actually. I'm going to try to leave my clothes on tonight just to give the newcomers some hope. I want to thank my friend Douglas. Douglas is a pilot. He just recently was licensed. And he was very excited when I was invited to come here, and he offered to fly me here. And I haven't been restored to sanity. I said, okay. And unfortunately, I don't know, something happened with the weather. Douglas can explain it in all the airplane lingo. The only thing I really understood was no air conditioning. So we didn't fly over. We drove over. However, he was pretty well determined that if he got that car up to 100 miles an hour for long enough, it would take off. I'm a recovering Catholic. I'm doing this a lot on the way. Thank you, Douglas. And I got to spend some time with my boyfriend, Billy Smith. He doesn't know he's my boyfriend. Well, actually, I guess he does now, but... Most of my most successful relationships are in my head. Most of the ones that last longest are the ones I don't tell you about. Billy Smith and I are having an incredibly successful relationship. And it was good to hang out with him. I saw some friends of mine that I haven't seen in a long time. Bill George, who was in the second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I attended. I can't believe you stayed sober that long without a day of recovery, but Bill, it was good to see you. Okay, can I offend anybody else? There's probably somebody else who needs to be offended. I haven't gotten to you yet, but there's... Oh, because I've got about 50 minutes, so just... Relax and we'll move along. My sponsor always tells me when I do the... Oh, Jesus, my pocket's vibrating. Wait a minute. I used to wear my garage door opener so I looked important, but... My sponsor always tells me when I do this I should tell you my name and tell you the truth. I've told you my name. I'm not so sure I'm going to tell you the truth. And the reason for that is, it's obvious to me, I don't know about anybody else, but it's really clear to me, when I was out there, I didn't know that what it used to be like was going to be important. If I would have known... If I would have known when I was drinking that I was going to be expected to report to you what it used to be like, I would have paid a lot more attention to my life. If I would have known when I was going to be out, when I was out there, if I would have known about steps 4 and 5, I can assure you I would have done some things completely differently than I did them. I would have taken notes. I'm very anal. I would have written things down, but I didn't know that was going to be important. On top of that, I'm a blackout drinker. I love blackouts. I love blackouts. I wish we could have blackouts sober. There was, there was nothing more exciting to me than leaving work on April 12th, going back on April 16th, and discovering I'd been there the entire time. It just, it makes the time between paychecks so much shorter. But if you're a blackout drinker, what it used to be like can be a little sketchy. And so what I report to you is my perspective of what it used to be like, and it's... I know I have a job, so I had to get a fingerprint clearance for the job that I have, and I fingerprint really, really well. I'm really good at fingerprinting. I know how to roll along with them. I don't, I've got a lot of practice. I don't go too fast. I don't resist them. I just roll right nicely with them. And when they were taking my fingerprints, I didn't want to raise any red flags, so I very casually said to the woman, well, how far back are you going to check? And she looked me in the eye and said, from the day you were born. And I thought, oh my gosh, it's like a fifth step, only it's in the wrong order because they're going to know about it before I do. And the book Alcoholics Anonymous says more will be revealed. It does not say how. So I remember when that report came back, the woman called me up. And, you know, sometimes when normal people are going to give us what they think is bad news, they kind of have a hesitancy in her voice. And she was really pretty hesitant when she called and she told me that my report had come back. And she said, you know, normally these reports are 2 or 3 pages long. I said, uh-huh. She said, yours was 57 pages. And she asked me if I wanted to see it. Well, of course I did. And I went down and I read that report, and I can tell you I know a lot more about what it used to be like, having read that report, than I knew before that. So this is just my perspective of what it used to be like. It may or may not be true, but it's kind of a fun story, so I just keep telling it. I didn't have my first drink until I was 13 years old. I'm really sorry that I waited that long, but I had no idea what alcohol would do to me or for me. As far as I know, I had never thought about alcohol. I hadn't really thought, oh, I can't wait until I can drink, and I certainly never thought I would never drink. I never thought about alcohol at all. And yet when I was 13 years old, I was on a camping trip with a group of girls. We were camped on the beach in Southern California, just south of Oceanside. I remember getting into the tent that Friday night, and I had a bottle of vodka in my pillowcase. And to this day, I don't know where that bottle came from. I have always believed it was the grace of God, but I can't verify that. But I remember taking that bottle out of the pillowcase, and I remember being excited about having it. And I had no idea what alcohol would do to me or for me. But I was excited about having it, and I asked if anybody wanted any, and they didn't. And the reason they gave me for not wanting it was all we had to mix with it was grape soda and root beer. And I said, well, so what? And I took off the top, and I drank half the bottle. I looked around the tent. Nothing had gotten different. Nothing had changed. I drank the second half of the bottle. And that was to be the end of my social drinking. Never again after that day did I ever offer anybody a drink out of my bottle. And I don't know about anybody else in Alcoholics Anonymous, but I never had resentment until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I never had resentments out there, but one of my early resentments in Alcoholics Anonymous is I heard you talk about your first drink, and you talked about taking the drink, and you described how it felt in your mouth, and you described how it felt as it went down your throat, and you talked about it hitting your stomach, and it exploded, and you said it went to your fingernails and your toenails. You grew a couple inches taller, your pimples fell off, you dropped 20 pounds, you became Prince Charles, Lady Di. Wonderful things happened to you. And that was not the case for me. I had my first drink of alcohol and absolutely nothing happened to me for about 15 minutes. And at the end of the 15 minutes, the only thing that happened to me is I had to go to the bathroom. And it's my belief tonight that if you were to drink a quart of anything, in about 15 minutes, you would have to go to the bathroom. So I remember leaving the tent. I shuffled through the sand to the outhouse. I went and went to the bathroom. And when I got done, I went to get up. I realized I was absolutely, totally, 100% paralyzed in the toilet seat. I could not move. I couldn't even blink. I didn't feel my heart beating, and I was overcome with a sense of fear. And, of course, the fear was that somebody else was going to have to come use that outhouse, and there I was, paralyzed in the toilet seat. Now, later in my drinking, I did discover that two people can use the same toilet at the same time. If the second person is very careful about what they're doing, but I didn't know that at 13. I guess somehow, it is a visual, isn't it? I mean, think of it. It's like, I just somehow figured that the body was made up of energy, and I somehow figured if I could gather my energy, I would be all right. And so I've always referred to it as my first formal meditation. Because I sat and I gathered my energy. And when it seemed to be in one place, when it seemed to be centrally located, I just sort of fell off the toilet, out the door, into the sand, and started crawling back to the tent. Now, of course, as coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, I discovered my entire problem that night was my attitude. If my attitude would have been right, I could have had a fantasy as in the Marines, as being dive bombs, as trying to get back in safety, and if my attitude would have been right, it could have been a wonderful experience. Now, in my own defense, I always have to tell you that my pants were still down at my ankles. I had started to get sick. I couldn't quite get through it. I couldn't get around it. And I've always thought under those circumstances it's a little difficult to have a good attitude. I did somehow manage to get back to the tent. I fell in and I passed out. And when I came to in the morning, I realized nobody was in the tent with me, and I couldn't figure out where they went until I noticed that I'd been sick all night long. I'd hit the top of the tent, the side of the tent, and hadn't missed a square inch. And quite frankly, I didn't want to be in the tent either, so I got out of there. And that was my first drink of alcohol. And it was the most incredible, marvelous, magnificent, fabulous, wonderful spiritual experience I'd ever had. And it must have been because I put some amount of alcohol into my body from that day until the day I came through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't always drink the kinds of things that you would classify as a beverage. I drank a lot of vanilla extract. I used to buy it by the six-pack. I drank a lot of mouthwash. I drank a lot of perfume. Taboo became my after-dinner drink of choice. I'll tell you, I still have a problem with Taboo. If you're wearing it, I may follow you too closely and laugh at your neck. I'm often tempted when I share to introduce myself and say, I'm Patty and I'm a pig. Because I ate and drank everything in your bathroom. And it never occurred to me that was unusual. It never occurred to me that other people didn't live that way. And it says it in the book. It says something to the effect that we believe our life was the only normal one. I had no idea that there was anything wrong with that. I thought I drank because I wanted to drink. I didn't know that at 13 years old I put alcohol into an alcoholic body. From that day on, I had no choice. I thought I drank because I wanted to drink. And I was a bar drinker. I was a living room drinker, an alley drinker, a car drinker, a dumpster drinker. I didn't specialize in this drink. But I love bars. I love sleazy, nasty, disgusting bars. I like bars that, I like them when the mirrors are cracked. You kind of have to dip around to see yourself in there. Cold breeze ripped around the bar. It's always nice if there's a broken bar stool in the corner or something. They're full of smoke and they have that wonderful used booze urine smell there. I salivate still. I love that smell. But what fascinates me in retrospect, what fascinates me is the quality of people who drank in those places. I mean, there were CEOs of really big companies. There were bank presidents. There were admirals in the Air Force. There were neurosurgeons. I mean, that's what they said they were. And I certainly never told a lie in those bars, but we weren't sitting around having conversations like, well, what do you prefer, the red mouthwash or the green? What's your preference, Chantilly or Aqua Velva? We weren't having those kinds of conversations, so it doesn't occur to me I'm living any different than anybody else. I think I drink because I want to drink. I don't know, and I don't have a choice. I have the opportunity to go to college. I went to San Diego State. I graduated with a 3.8 grade point average. I share that with you because it almost killed me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I got here, I told you I was too smart to be an alcoholic. Nobody with a 3.8 grade point average could possibly be an alcoholic. I was a chronic, hopeless, helpless alcoholic. I was drinking on a daily basis. I'm a blackout drinker, and I graduated from college with a 3.8 grade point average. I left San Diego because I had taken all the classes San Diego State has to offer. My disease manifests itself in rationalization, justification, and denial. No matter what it is I'm doing, I explain it to you why I'm doing it. As I'm explaining it to you, I'm hearing it. As I'm hearing it, I'm believing it. And I think I'm leaving because I've taken all the classes San Diego State has to offer. It doesn't occur to me I'm leaving because I have a roommate who's a little annoyed with me. I have a roommate who was, those of you in Al-Anon will understand this. I have a roommate who was really inconsistent. And I'm drinking in a bar, and I'm a chronic alcoholic, only I don't know it. But even at the end of my alcoholism, I had a tremendous amount of compassion. And I'd be sitting in a bar drinking, and if this offends you, I suppose you deserve it, but the men who drank in the bars that I drank in had absolutely no creativity. They have two basic lines. My wife doesn't understand, And their other one was, I have no place to stay tonight. That was typically the end of it. And I have a tremendous amount of compassion. So some guy would come on to me with one of those lines, and I would say, listen, I'll take you home with me tonight, but I don't want to talk to you again until the bar closes. So at the end of the night, being the lady of my word, I would take this guy home with me. And we would get to my house, and we'd go in, and I would send him into the bedroom. I have to go to the bathroom. I would send him into the bedroom on the right. I would go into my bedroom on the left. And I had just sent him in with my roommate. Now, some nights that would be okay with her. Some nights she wouldn't mind at all. Other nights, within a matter of minutes, there'd be all this banging on my door. I'd lock my door. I mean, I have 7 o'clock classes. I got to get some sleep. And if it would have always been all right or never been all right, I'd have been okay. But she was so inconsistent, you'd have drank if you left her there. It was just, and I don't think I'm leaving because she's annoyed with me. I think I'm leaving because I've taken all the classes at San Diego State has to offer. I don't think I'm leaving because I got another drunk driving assault charge pending. And, you know, in other words, I'm going to go on an Alcoholics Anonymous. I came here and found out I didn't get arrested for a single charge of drunk driving. I never knew that I was getting arrested for drunk driving assault. And it had something to do with how I got out of the car. And here's the thing, I'm driving down the street, the light comes on behind me, I pull over, the officer walks up, the first thing I do is slam my car door open. Now my intent is to knock him in the private part. Men are a little fussy about their private parts, so as the door's flying open, he jumps back to protect himself. And when he jumps back, it's really a good thing because now he's far enough away I can get him in focus. And I think, one of him, one of me, one of him, one of me, I think I can take him. One of him, one of me, I think I'll try and I would go for him. It'd be a really good fight for a couple of minutes, but I wouldn't remember that back in the car he had a friend. And the friend had a radio, and the friend would call some more friends. And there's going to be 3 or 4 of them, one of me, it's not fair anymore, it's Angela, and they take me away. The next time the light comes on behind me, I pull over. The officer walks up, I slam my car door open, try and knock him in the private parts. He jumps back to protect himself, he gets far enough away and get him in focus, and I think, one of him, one of me. One of him, one of me, I think I can take him. One of him, one of me, I think I'll try, and I go for him. Good fight for a couple of minutes, but I wouldn't remember the friend, the radio, and the friend. There's going to be 4 or 5 of them, one of me, it's not fair anymore, it's Angela, and they take me away. And I didn't do that once or twice. I did that 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 times. And that's the insanity of mind disease. The insanity of mind disease is I do the same thing over and over, and I think the results are going to be different. This time it's a fair fight. This time I'm going to take him. And when you get out of the car like that, they attach an assault charge. They don't even care that they won the fight. Drunk driving assault. Drunk driving assault. And I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing, but I drank during the time when the state of California didn't get their underwear and sits in line about drunk driving. I understand they're a little testy about it now, but I mean, I never had any consequence. Well, I did. They took my driver's license away from me. But you don't need that to drive a car. Other than that, I paid an attorney $1,000, which was a lot of money. But he'd write a letter, he'd make a phone call, whatever he'd do, and that would kind of be the end of it. I never really gave it much more thought. One time, though, I had 2 pending at the same time, and my attorney was nervous. Now, if your attorney's going to be nervous, you got to pay some attention. So I'm sitting in a bar, worried about the fact that my attorney's nervous. And I struck up a conversation with the guy next to me, and as luck would have it, he worked in the mortuary. And I came up with a plan. It's a good plan. We alcoholics, we come up with really good plans really quickly, huh? We went to the mortuary, we got a death certificate, we put my name on it, we filled out all the pertinent information, forged the doctor's signature, and sent it to the court. Because they can't expect a lot from you if you're dead. And I called my attorney, I told him he didn't have to worry, he didn't worry, I didn't worry, nobody worried. For about 30 days, and then I got arrested for drunk driving assault again, and that time the judge wanted to see me, and I couldn't figure out why he never wanted to see me before, but I went. And I'll never forget him looking at me and saying, "Miss Ochoa, tell me, how is it a dead person is standing in my court?" I shrugged my shoulders, and with all sincerity, I looked at him and said, "I don't know, bad luck." And that's what I thought it was. It was bad luck. It was circumstances and conditions. It was the cops. It was you and they and them. It was a lot of things that never occurred to me had anything to do with drinking. Never occurred to me. I left San Diego. I headed for Chico, California, which is about as far north as you could get. I took two cases of beer, two bottles of booze. I headed north. Santa Ana, I ran out of booze and I was thirsty. I have a sense I can find the sleaziest bar without even finding it. And I pulled into the parking lot of this place. I walked in and was full of smoking and that wonderful used booze urine smell. Willie Nelson was singing on the jukebox and I knew I was home. That's as far north as I ever got. 88 miles from where I started from. Alcohol had become my mother, my father, my God, my friend, my lover, my companion, my support. And at some point it had turned. And I've always believed it was in the middle of my first drink, but at some point it had turned. It began to strip me of self-esteem, self-worth, dignity, decency, honesty, integrity, pride, all the things we have going for us as human beings. And long before I got to you, it had taken it all. Long before I got to you, I went into the profession of my choice. I rose very quickly to the top, and that too almost killed me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because when I got here, I told you I was too successful to be an alcoholic. I told you about the big old guest that sat behind. I told you about the trophies and the plaques. What I didn't tell you about was I was in the newspaper business, and I didn't tell you about the times that I would come out of a blackout standing behind a podium much like this in a room full of people holding an award, not knowing if I was giving it or receiving it. And so I would say thank you, and I would sit down, and then I'd get elbowed. Somebody would tell me I was presenting it to the Kiwanis Club, and I'd have to get up and start over again. And I didn't tell you that. I just told you I was too successful to be an alcoholic. I arrived in Alcoholics Anonymous with what I prayed God was my last drunk driving assault. In 1975, the state of California was starting to get their underwear in a knot about people barreling down the freeway at 80 miles an hour, blowing something in the breathalyzer above their grade point average. And I had practiced field sobriety tests a lot. Every time I get released from jail, I get the arrest report. I read it. I find out where I made my mistakes so I can practice that so that next time I'll get that right. And I always knew there'd be a next time. I always knew there'd be a next time because the cops were always looking for me. They knew what I was driving. They always knew what I was driving. Whether it was my car or your car or stolen car, they always knew. And they were always looking for me. So I practiced field sobriety tests a lot. And when I prayed God was my last drunk driving assault, I was doing really, really good. In fact, I mentioned to the officer, I thought I was doing A-plus work. And at the end of the test, he asked me to say the ABCs backwards. Well, the time before I had responded with, "Well, I can't even do that sober." Well, then I just confessed, and they took me away. So on the last one, when he asked me to say the ABCs backwards, I said, "Okay," and I turned around. You think it's funny? He wasn't even amused. I was turned around. He cuffed me, took me to Orange County Jail, and they put me in a cell with criminals, and I knew I didn't belong there. Tried to organize a prison break. I explained the plan very carefully and very slowly to the criminals. We're going to get our coffee cups, we're going to bang them on the bars and make a lot of noise. The marshal's going to see what's going on and throw my arm around their neck. We're getting their keys, we're getting out of here. And I heard something I was to hear in Alcoholics Anonymous. One of the criminals looked at me and she said, "Why don't you sit down and shut up?" I said, "Fine, then y'all stay, but I'm getting out. I'm feeling like a mad woman on those bars." There's a couple problems with styrofoam cups. First one is they don't make a lot of noise. The second one is the bars have a tendency to eat them up. Bars ate them up and it got to my knuckles and it got painful. I sat down and I shut up. I went to court on that charge. I was 26 years old. I was drunk that morning in court, and the state of California was really starting to get upset about drunk drivers. And coupled with that and my past record, I've been sentenced to 10 years in prison. I have a son that's a direct result of my alcoholism. I never wanted to be a mother. I found out that is not adequate birth control. My son was 8 months old at the time, and I didn't like him. He didn't do anything. He wet and he cried. He wouldn't get a job. He was really a nuisance. I wasn't really particularly fond of him, but I was willing to use him that morning. And I told the judge that he couldn't put me in jail because I was a single parent and I was self-supporting through my own contributions. And he told me to put my son in a foster home because I was an unfit mother. And he began to sentence me. In the middle of sentencing me, the expression on his face changed, the tone of his voice got different. And he looked at me and he said, I know this won't work for you, but I'm going to offer you one more chance. He offered me an alternative. And a part of that alternative was me use of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wish I could tell you that I took the alternative. I came here, looked at the 12 steps. I knew there were solutions to problems in my life. I worked them all in the first week and skyrocketed to recovery. And if there wasn't somebody here who was at my second meeting, I would tell you that. Sometimes I do tell that, but especially when it's not being taped, I like to tell that. But I sit in the courtroom and I thought about it. Jail alternative. Jail. There's more alcohol and other drugs inside the institution than there are some days on the street. If you know what to do, who to do it to, and you're willing to go to any length, and I always was. Jail alternative. And as drunk as I was that morning, I had what I know tonight was a moment of clarity. Because as drunk as I was, I knew clearer than I knew anything. If I go to jail one more time, I'm either going to die in the institution or I'll be institutionalized for life. And I didn't know why I knew it, but I took the alternative. And I left the courtroom and I drank for 3 more months. In retrospect, I can tell you I didn't drink a greater quantity. Physically, it had been impossible to drink a greater quantity of alcohol, but I drank with a sense of urgency and a desperation that I had never known. And on October 4th, 1975, the day before I had to go back to court to tell the judge what it was I was doing with the alternative he gave me, on that day I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know what ANA was. I thought it was something like the PTA or Parents Without Partners. And a lot of days it is, but I, as far as I know, I had never heard the words Alcoholics Anonymous before. And that first meeting was a speaker meeting. I didn't know what you people were going to do to me or for me. And I don't know who talked that night. But I heard 2 things. I heard we don't drink between meetings. Well, I quickly looked around and didn't see anybody drinking in the meeting. And I thought, if you're not drinking in the meeting and you don't drink between the meetings, when do you drink? I don't know how that impacts other newcomers, but it made me really nervous. Another thing that I heard was that the answers were in this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. So after the meeting, I stole the book. I mean, God knows I need to have the answers. I can't tell you how irritated I was. I went home and read the book. Not only could I not find the answers in there, I couldn't even find the question. And I thought, oh dear God, I've stolen the wrong book, and I'm going to have to go back and get the right one. And I'm a thief. It's humiliating for a thief to have stolen the wrong book. But I know about the answer book. When I was in college, I taught school for a very short period of time. I don't like children. But I like writing on the blackboard, and I like talking. These are not adequate qualities for a school teacher, but it was all I had going for me. And I taught second grade, and I was writing on the blackboard and talking, and sometimes what I talked about went along with what I was writing, but not usually. And I'm writing, and I'm not the kind of teacher that can wait till 3:30 to drink. I got a bottle in my desk. If you have 37-year-olds, you got to drink all day long. I have a bottle in my desk, and I'm hitting off of it all day long. And one day in my zealousness, I accidentally turned too much, and I caught the class out of the corner of my eye, which I didn't like to do, but it was an accident. And as I caught the class out of the corner of my eye, one little boy's jumping up and down. Today we know it's attention deficit disorder. We didn't know what it was then. It was annoying then, and made me lose my train of thought. I said, Billy, what is it? What do you want? He said, Mr. Joey, you spelled mountain wrong. Rationalization, justification, denial is how my disease manifests itself. I can make myself right without missing a heartbeat. I said, Billy, that's really good, and I'd like the rest of the class to notice what Billy's done. Because Billy was paying attention, he found the word that I misspelled. Every once in a while, I'm going to spell a word incorrectly just to see if you're paying attention. So I wrote Billy's name on the board, put a star after his name, and we all want stars after our name. I had 30 kids from 8:30 in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon on the edge of their seats, finding the words that I spelled in. I rarely looked at them again, but they were paying attention. And I said, Romley, if you were in San Diego about 30 years ago, I'd like to make amends for the fact that you're illiterate. But anyway, because I have that experience, I know about the answer book. I came back to Alcoholics Anonymous to get the answer book. That's the only reason I came back. I don't think it matters why you come back. I don't think it matters what your motive is, what your intentions are. I think what's important is what your actions are. Wednesday was 4 days of sobriety. I came to my second meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous to get the answer book. And that was a small discussion meeting. And in that meeting, I heard, if you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it. And I looked around the room, and I looked around the room, and I looked around the room, and I could not figure out what it was you had that was so odd that I should be willing to go to any length to get it. I mean, look at the person next to you. Unless you're sleeping with them, what is it? I mean, I... And then I saw him. And I truly believe there's a him for each of us. This guy was a skinny little fellow. He was bald-headed. He wore baggy pants. Not like the kids. I don't know about in Laughlin, but I work with teenagers in California. I got kids that wear pants that have absolutely no relationship to their body size. They wear pants that are so big, they honestly got it. They could put a homeless family in there with them. But kids weren't that big, but they were baggy. I had tennis shoes on with no shoelaces, but the holes were there where they should have been, and he nodded out during the meeting. And I quickly assessed the situation. I figured he's shooting heroin. Folks who shoot heroin, not out. And I can probably do this thing and not drink if I can shoot a little heroin. So I found out where he worked. And the next day I went down to his office and I said, Dick, I have to do this thing called Alcoholics Anonymous. It's out of jail and I don't know how to do it. And he told me if I would go to meetings and read the book and talk to other alcoholics and not drink, so I guarantee you won't get drunk. If you don't get drunk, your life will get different. And I'm grateful he told it to me that way. He didn't tell me my life would get better. He didn't tell me my family life would get better, my relationships would get better, my finances would get better, my job life would get better, my sex life would get better. He didn't tell me any of it would get better, and I'm grateful, because none of it has. A little hope for the newcomer. But it's all gotten different. And as I stand here tonight, I can tell you from the top of my head to the tip of my toes, I have never had it so good. So I don't know good from bad for me. I'm going to something I think is good for me, and it generally turns out to be bad for me. And I'm going to something I think is bad for me, and it generally turns out to be good for me. I don't know good from bad for me. I've gone through times in my sobriety where my entire life has fallen apart. I've gone through times where incredibly painful things have happened. And I'm really dramatic, so I always refer to it as the dark night of the soul. Unless, of course, you're going through it, then I just tell you to get over yourself. But in those times, if I don't drink and don't die, and don't drink and don't die, I've gotten far enough beyond it to, in retrospect, see that every time I thought my life was falling apart, what was really happening is it was falling together. And it had to be exactly that way for God to move me to where he had me be. You see, I will shortchange myself on a daily basis. I get comfortable with what is. I get really, really comfortable with right here, right now. I am really content. And I will give you a little rush. I'll decorate it. I am very happy right here. But there's a God that has a plan for me beyond my wildest imagination. I have a pretty wild imagination. Beyond my wildest imagination. And sometimes to get me out of that, God's got to kick me in the butt to get me out of that rut. And in that kick in the butt, sometimes it's painful. And I don't drink and don't die and don't drink and don't die. And in retrospect, see that every time I thought my life was falling apart, what was really happening is it was falling together. My perspective of my life, and it probably isn't even true, but it's my perspective. My perspective of my life is people hurt me all my life. People disappointed me and they let me down. My parents told me they loved me anymore, their love and I'd have died. Their love was physically, emotionally, and mentally abusive. People told me they'd be there and they weren't. And they hurt me and they let me down. And they hurt me and they let me down. And as a small child, I remember making a conscious decision. I don't want to be hurt anymore. As a small child, I began to build a brick wall between me and you. Because I just don't want to be hurt anymore. And that brick wall worked really well. It kept you out. What I didn't know about that brick wall is it made me a prisoner inside. I lived behind that brick wall in isolation and loneliness. And alcohol didn't allow me to come out and play. Alcohol just made it okay for me to be back there. When you live behind a wall like that, you don't believe and you don't trust. But I believed that old man that morning. And I didn't know why then, but I know why tonight. I believed that old man because of the music of Alcoholics Anonymous. One alcoholic talking to another. One alcoholic talking to another goes through that brick wall. And I believed him. And that old man that I thought was shooting heroin, I need to tell you, was sober longer than I've been alive. Which shows you what my judgment of people was like. But the reason that he nodded out in that meeting is he had something inside that I never clue as to what it was. He had a serenity and a peace inside. He was right with us. He was right with God. He was right with himself. And I had no idea what that was about. But I believed him that morning. I already had the book, so I opened it to the line where it says, most of us are unwilling to admit we are real alcoholics. I say amen and close the book, and that was reading the book. I go down to the Canyon Club in Laguna Beach where they have AA meetings. I have a cup of coffee. On the way out, I say hi, Jim, the manager. He'd say hi, Patty. That was talking to another alcoholic. My core program said I had to go to 2 meetings a week. I thought that was really abusive, really obsessive, but I was willing to go to any length to stay out of jail. So I went to the 2 meetings a week my core program said I had to go to. And the only thing I did right is I didn't drink. And I didn't drink, and I didn't drink, and I didn't drink. And I pray God happens to everybody who's new what happened to me. 8.5 months away from my last drink. I've been in pain in the last 29 years. Sometimes life is painful. I had an idea. Nobody told me this. I made it up. I make up stuff all by myself. I don't need your input. All by myself, I made up that if I worked the steps really, really hard with enough passion, with enough zealousness, if I really, really, really worked the steps, I would somehow skyrocket above human. I would just kind of float up here where nothing bad would ever happen to me. I'd never have a feeling that I judged as negative. I would always have a parking place in front of Nordstrom. I'd never have a flat tire. Life would never be uncomfortable. The truth for me in taking the steps is I've come into my humanness. And as a human being, I sometimes experience pain, insecurity, fear, self-doubt. The difference is I have you. And when I go through those feelings that I judge as negative, you take my hand and walk with me. And every time you walk with me, you open new doors and add to my life. If I tried to do it by myself, I shortchanged myself. I will continue to shortchange myself left to my own devices. But when you take my hand and walk with me, you open new doors and add to my life. And so I've been in pain in the last 29 years. But I have never been in the kind of pain that I was in at 8.5 months away from my last drink. The pain of not drinking and not recovering. The pain of not drinking and not recovering is the greatest pain I've ever been in. And 8.5 months away from my last drink, that pain drove me to my knees. And I took the first step of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. I admitted that I was powerless over alcohol. That whenever I ingest alcohol, I'm damned to live the same way, day after day after day. If I don't like the way I live today, I can choose to live differently tomorrow. But if I drink alcohol, I have no choices. When I drink alcohol, alcohol determines how I'm going to live. And I'm powerless. Whenever I get into the ring with alcohol, I lose when I'm fighting it because I'm drinking it or I'm fighting it because you're drinking it. And my life has become a manageable. Alcohol controlled every area of my life. I had some choices. And that day I took the first step of recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety was a gift from a very gentle and a very loving God. On October 4th, 1975, I was given the gift of sobriety. A gift I didn't want, a gift I wasn't looking for, a gift I certainly never asked for. But I was given the gift of sobriety. And 8.5 months later, I chose to recover in Alcoholics Anonymous. On my knees, taking the first step, I chose to recover in Alcoholics Anonymous. The book says these are the steps we took which are suggested as a program of recovery. My experience is once I chose to recover in Alcoholics Anonymous, I am required to work the 12 steps exactly the way they're written in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And that day I chose to recover. And I need to tell you that I have taken the steps. What happened for me are the 12 steps to recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have taken the steps the way they're written in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I never took any of them until I'd run out of my own ideas. I have much better ideas than the steps. The steps are not deep enough. They're not therapeutic enough. There has to be more clinical expertise. I have come up with other ideas, and I have used up every other idea I have. I become willing to look at the next one, the 12 steps to recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous. When my back's against the wall, the pain's so great, it's do it or die, and I have no other choice. And I have taken the steps exactly the way they're written in the book. Step two for me is basically said to me, and I often say that I have no problem with God, but the truth is I have one problem with God. My only problem with God is I believe we're all God's children, and I've always wanted to be an only child. That's my only problem with God, but I'm a loner by nature. I love to be by myself. I hear people say alcoholics alone are in bad company. when I'm by myself, I'm in the best company. I entertain myself much better than you could ever think of entertaining me. I like to do things by myself. I like to fish, not at 5:30 in the morning, but I like to fish. I like to read. You know you're a loner if you don't like AA potlucks. That's generally the indicator. But I'm a loner. And Alcoholics Anonymous didn't change my nature. But what you've done is given me the courage and strength that I need in order to do the things I need to do in spite of my nature. The most difficult thing I do is to be with you. The book says we become disgustingly and dangerously antisocial. I didn't become that way. Start out that way. I have, over the last 29 years, learned one social skill. However, I used it at dinner, so I'm fresh out. And being a loner, if I had come to believe that the power greater than myself in step two was God, if I had come to believe that God was going to reach for me to stand, I'd have sat on my couch, which is my place of preference. God would have flown in, sprinkled me with sandy, taken off to wherever this God hangs out, and that would have been the end of it, and I would have never had to do another thing, and somebody else would be here sharing with you this evening. So for me, the power greater than myself was the action of steps 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. You see, I spent my whole life trying to think my way into right living. That has never worked for me. But as a result of taking the action and the steps, I have been able to act my way into right thinking. And in the discussion of step 10, it says, for by this time sanity will have been restored. So I came to believe that through taking the action, the steps, I would be restored to right thinking. Step 3 says make a decision. I make 1,000 decisions today. I have no problem making a decision. What I have some difficulty with is taking an action to implement the decision. That would give me some grief. But I have no problem making the decision. The steps is just make the decision. How do you want to live? Chronic hopeless alcoholic? Do you want to believe the people in AA are telling you the truth? Incomprehensible demoralization? Hope. Despair? Hope. It's not a tough decision. I think I'll go with hope. But the decision has no impact on my life. What has impact on my life is taking an action. And the first right action for me was the inventory. And I wrote my inventory the way the book says to do. I made the 4 columns. I wrote down everybody who breathed air that I thought should have been mine. Wrote down in the second column what you did to me. Well, I wanted to tell you all my life what they've done to me. I was having really a lot of fun doing that. Third column, how it affected me. Well, my security, my self-worth, well, no wonder I drank. All these people did all these things to you, you'd have drank too. But then in my zealousness, I accidentally turned the page of the big book. Hidden after it shows the diagram, hidden in the body of the text, it says something to the effect of referring to our list. We put out of our minds the wrongs that is done, and we looked at our part. Well, it kind of takes all the fun out of it, but I did that. I did that with my resentments, my fears, and my relationships. And for the first time, I saw who Patio really was. You see, I spent my whole life putting on this show. My whole life was a show. And when I finished my 4th step for the first time, I saw who Patio really was. And it reminded me of a day that we went on a family picnic. My father's a drunk. My father's a Jekyll and Hyde drunk. My mother's a major untreated Al-Anon. There's 6 kids in the family. And it reminded me, took me back to a day that we went on a picnic, and my mother laid out the picnic blanket and all the food. And the minute she had it laid out, my father's a drunk passed out diagonally across the picnic. And it was kind of a cue for the kids to go nuts. We started grabbing food out from underneath them, throwing it at one another. And my mother's, the untreated Al-Anon, is trying to get us all back into control. We're ignoring her. The food's flying. And my mother spots the family across the park. And the family across the park is having a nice little family picnic. The kids are being little boys and little ladies and gentlemen. They're playing frisbee with the dog. And my mother gets an idea. And I think for an Al-Anon, an idea can be as deadly as a drink for an alcoholic. Because my mother thinks, why can't we have a family like that? So she spends the whole next week putting the fear of God into us. She buys a new wicker basket. She buys some Melman plates. The next Sunday, we take the dog, who hasn't been out of the backyard in 10 years. We go to the park. She lays it all out. She props my father, the drunk, against the tree so that when he passed out, he was up against the tree. We try playing frisbee. The dog didn't have a clue as to what to do with it. And I thought about that day. And I thought, what if on that day there was a family on the other side of the park pointing to us, saying, why can't we have a family like that? And you see, that's what my whole life was. My whole life was a show. And I had come to believe the show. And for the first time, I saw who Patio really was. I did my fifth step by mistake. I didn't mean to recover this quickly, but I did my fifth step. And when I did my fifth step, that big brick wall I had built between me and you, one brick came out of that wall. One lousy brick. But every time I share with another alcoholic, another brick has come out of that wall. And tonight I have no brick wall between me and you. I have a little styrofoam thing I throw up sometimes because sometimes I get afraid. Sometimes I feel insecure. Sometimes I have self-doubt. And you're not there, so I throw this little styrofoam thing up. And then one of you comes and blows on it, knocks it down, and takes my hand and walks with me. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of strength to continue to choose to recover. Cowards drink and use. I know because I did that on a daily basis for 13 years. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of strength to continue to choose to recover, and I don't have it. But you do. And I come sit in the middle of you, and you take my hand when we pray at the end of the meeting. And the person on my right gives me a little strength, and the person on my left gives me a little courage. And you give me the courage and strength that I need to continue to choose to recover. And you don't have to have 10 years, 5 years, 1 year. You've got one day. You have courage to give to the person on your right. You have strength to give to the person on your left. We can do what I can't. I need you more tonight than I needed you when I first came here. And so I use your courage and I use your strength. And one brick at a time, that wall has come down. And when I throw the styrofoam thing out, there you are. You take my hand and give me the courage I need and walk with me through it. Step 6 and 7, I went home from doing my fifth step. I just kind of got lulled into reading the book. You don't need to be a journalism major to know the book Alcoholics Anonymous is very poorly written. Actually, any newcomer will tell you, but the part about step 6 and 7 is kind of poetic, and I kind of got lulled into reading it. And when I became aware of what I was reading, I knew that I believed it. And that prayer in the 7th step, that prayer took the longest journey anything's ever taken for me. The journey from my head to my heart. And I finished reading it exactly in what it says in the book happened to me. I walked through the archway to freedom. I walked away from the person I've been all of my life to start to become the person God intended for me to be. And I believe that's the miracle here. We tell new people don't leave before the miracle happens, and we don't tell them what the miracle is. I believe the miracle is we have an opportunity to walk away from the person we've been all of our life to start to become the person God intended for us to be. And I think too many people leave before they give themselves that chance. The best I've ever described myself when I came here was an animal with latent human tendencies. That's what walked in the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous. But because you've been willing to share with me, I've become very kind, very loving, very nurturing, very caring. Of course, now you're telling me it's codependency and I have to recover from it. But I love the person who I am. I'm tempted to write a book, Women Who Love Themselves Too Much. Steps 8 and 9 are convention ways of getting rid of conventional guilt. I felt guilty because I was guilty. I did a lot of things to a lot of people for one more drink. If it came between you and a drink, I took a drink. A job and a drink, I took a drink. The only thing I wanted to do, since I was in the 4th grade, was be a writer. Had an opportunity to go into that profession, I gave it up for one more drink. Anything in a drink, I took a drink. I felt guilty because I was guilty. And the amends weren't about saying sorry. I said sorry all my life. Sorry, sorry, sorry. Then I do it again and get caught. Sorry, sorry, sorry. Then I do it again and get caught. The amends weren't about sorry. The amends were about living my life differently. And I don't know how to do that. I don't know how to be a daughter or a sister or a mother or an employee. I don't know how to do it. But the men and women in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know how. And you would share your experience with me. I'd come to you for an hour and a half, and you'd share how to be an employee and not take a drink. And I'd go out there and live it and become my experience. And I'd come here, and you'd share with me how to be a sister and not drink. And I'd go out there and live it and become my experience. And everything I am because the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous have shared with me what they've done. You have never told me what to do. You have always shown me what you have done. I had a coffee commitment. I think the most important commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous is coffee. Try to have a meeting without it. I mean, the coffee maker is the most important commitment. And they gave me the coffee maker commitment at my Monday night meeting, and I was very excited. And at the end of the meeting, they gave me this big old coffee pot and this big old can of coffee, and I took my supplies home with me. Next Monday, I got there early. Now, I don't know about you, but I live alone. I never make coffee in a big old coffee pot like this. I filled it up with water, and then I opened up my big old can of coffee, and I just poured it all in the basket, and I plugged it in, and it started. Well, it took a long time, but it finally went, baloop.
Baloop. Baloop. In it, Baloop.
And about an hour later, the first guy from the meeting showed up and he poured a big old hit off of that coffee, take a big old slug of it, his eyeballs rolled back in his head. He stood up a little straighter. He didn't say a word. The next person came in and poured some coffee and she took a big old hit and her eyeballs rolled back and didn't say a word. Pretty soon they're only filling up a half a cup and they're... And we had, nobody said a word, and we had the meeting. And at the end of the meeting, the secretary's making the announcements, and the secretary said, you know, we had a steering committee. And I thought, well, when did they do that? I've been here for an hour and a half before the meeting. But we had a steering committee meeting, and we have concurred that coffee is the most important commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm thinking, yes, it is. In fact, it is so important that we're going to assign a co-coffee maker. And they assigned me a co-coffee maker, and... after the meeting, I gave my co-coffee makers half of the supplies, and we went home, and the next week we showed up, and if I know nothing, I know how to delegate. I filled up the coffee pot, told him to do the coffee. He opened it up, he measured out how much went in that little basket, he plugged it in, bloop, 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 bloop. People came in, got it. You never said, this is the worst damn coffee I've ever had. You never said, who made this coffee? Throw them out of Alcoholics Anonymous. You never said, patio, you're a piece of poop, you don't know how to do anything. You had never said that. He simply showed me how to make coffee. Everything I am because the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous have shown me what you have done. You've never told me what to do. You've simply shared with me what you have done. And I am so grateful for that. And I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous for that. I'm staying here to stay out of jail. Steps 10, 11, and 12 for me are the recovery steps. They're the steps that give me the privilege to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. They're the steps that allow me to sit in the middle of you. Step 10 says the process is powerful. Keep using it. Keep writing about it, talking about it, ask God to remove the defect, make amends if necessary, and then turn your attention to somebody you can help. What is it I can do for you? How can I be of service? It seems to me when I'm focused on my stuff, God can't do a thing with it. But I'm focused on your stuff, God can come in and take care of my business. I hear us tell new people every once in a while, let us love you until you can love yourself. I'm selfish and self-centered. It's the root of my disease. I have loved myself all of my life. I've made some hideously poor choices, but I have loved myself all of my life. My message is let us love you until you can love somebody else. The magic here is that I have my right hand in my sponsor's hand, and I can turn take somebody else's hand in my left hand. Let us love you until you can love somebody else. Step 11, my prayer in the morning is very simply, thy will be done. I'm so naive, I believe the rest of the day is God's business. My prayer at night is a little scary or offered to anybody who'd like to use it. My prayer at night is, dear God, please have people treat me tomorrow exactly the way I treated people today. And when I know I'm going to say that prayer tonight, it will hold me in good stead. It keeps me from flipping people off on the freeway. I still count, but I don't announce the number of items in the guy in front of me in the 10-item or less line. And I don't live my life so much out of virtue as I know I'm going to say that prayer tonight. Dear God, please have people treat me tomorrow exactly the way I treated people today. That prayer has changed my life. And step 12 is the greatest gift you've ever given me. The opportunity to take a little of my past and give it to another alcoholic. To look into the eyes of another alcoholic and say, honey, you don't have to live that way anymore. Take my hand, come with me, sit in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you don't have to live that way anymore. I want to tell you one story, and then I'll be done, because I think we have to bowl or something. And certainly the fishermen need to go to bed. And I'm particularly interested by that. I wanted to ask this question. I really don't know who to ask. In the program it says, attendance at live speaker meetings, badges are required. I want to know where the dead speakers are talking. Some of my favorite, Norm Alvey, as far as I'm concerned, the greatest speaker in Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you have him here talking tonight, I want to go hear him. So, anyway, I didn't know who to ask that question to. My son, the one that my son who was going to a foster home when I got sober, unfortunately the judge didn't take him from me, he left him with me. He was 11 months old when I got sober, and I didn't know what to do with him. I bring him to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with me, and the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous would take him and hold him on their lap and do whatever they did with him. And at the end of the meeting, you'd give him back to me. And the next meeting, I'd bring him, and he'd sit with you. And the end of the meeting, you gave him back to me. And the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous, you took him camping with you. You kept him for weekends. Everything my son knows, he learned from the men and women of Alcoholics Anonymous. He taught him how to be kind, be loving, be compassionate, be caring. I couldn't teach him that stuff. I didn't know that stuff. Everything he learned, he also taught him how to con and manipulate, which I've never been thrilled with. But apparently, you have to take the good with the bad. And my son's been to more meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous than most of the women I sponsor. If just sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous were enough, my son would have never had a problem. But just sitting in a meeting is not enough. If you're new tonight, just sitting in a meeting is not enough. And my son had to take a journey that all of you and I have taken. My son had to take a journey that no human being should ever have to take. My son took a journey that to the gates of insanity or death, into incomprehensible demoralization and despair. And I just need to tell you that I was in the ring with his disease. Whenever I do battle with alcohol, I lose. But I'm fighting it because you're drinking it, or I'm fighting it because I'm drinking it. I was in the middle of the ring with his disease. And I was getting beat up. He called me up. He lived in San Francisco, and he called me up and told me he needed money. He'd had an accident. His head was cut. He was bleeding. He needed to go to the emergency room. I said, well, give me the address. I'll send a check. He said, oh, no, I got to have cash. I said, well, I don't know how to do that. He told me. And I went and got a MoneyGram Saver card. I get a discount on the fee that I pay. And I'm in the ring with his disease, and I went and sent him MoneyGram to money. And a week later, he called me, and he had some accident, and he needed money, and I MoneyGrammed him money, and then I MoneyGrammed him money. And I'm going to different stores. I got one MoneyGram place where they think that he's in college, and I'm sending him money for books. I got another one where they think that he needs money for clothes. I got another one where they think that his children need something. Because I'm doing what we do with booze. I'm going to different places. I want the 17-year-old kid to know that I'm sending money again. So I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I told the truth. I came here and I told you what I was doing. And I didn't look good. It didn't look good on somebody as sober as long as I was. It didn't look good. But I'll tell you what, I would rather come to Alcoholics Anonymous and look bad than to be out there and look drunk. And so I came here and I told the truth and I told you what I was doing. And I was in the ring with his disease and I was getting beat up bad. And then he moved back down to Orange County and he was doing some things and he was trying to do something else. And one day he called me at work and he said, Mom, I need you to take me to detox. He's my only child. I love him more than I love life. God will do for me what I can't do for myself. God won't do for me what I can do for myself. God won't send me money in the mail because I have the ability to go to work. But God will do for me what I can't do for myself. And my son called that morning, and out of my mouth came words that I would not have said. I said, Patrick, I can't help you anymore. If I come, you're going to die. You just stay where you are. And I called the man in Alcoholics Anonymous and thank God he understood the traditions. He didn't say tell the kid to call me. He didn't say tell the kid to meet me at a meeting tonight. He said, where is he? And I gave him the address and he picked up a newcomer. And those two men went and got my son and they brought him to the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they did with him what you have done with me. They showed him how to be a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. They showed him how to stand at a door and greet. They showed him how... They read the book with him. They did the things with him that you've done with me. They brought him to the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. On October 23rd, 2002, my son was given the gift of sobriety. And he's in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous for that. I just came here to stay out of jail. That's all I wanted out of this deal. And I've gotten so much more. As a result of I got a job that I really, really love. And I'm really, really good at it, and I can tell you that because the book says we claim spiritual progress, and God does the work. I'm glad I get the paycheck, but God does the work. I have people in my life who I love, and I can let them love me exactly the way they want to love me. And I'm the person that hid behind that wall and just didn't want to be hurt anymore. I'm going to tell you a story that puts it all together for me. Don't you like speakers? I go, I'm just going to tell you one more story. And then, like, if you have to go to the bathroom really bad, you're going, okay, good. I can hold out for another minute. But I am going to tell you one more story. The story that it puts it all together for me. It's the story of the man that goes to St. Peter and he asks St. Peter to show him heaven and hell. St. Peter takes him to the door and says, hell on the door, but they open the door and they look in and it's a huge banquet. Tables and tables of food, as much food as you could ever imagine, any kind of food you'd ever want. And the people in that room, they're sitting amongst all that food. And they're hungry and they're dying and they're starving. And the reason that they're hungry is they have those long wooden spoons tied to their hands and the spoons are just a little bit too long and they can't quite get the food to their mouth. And so they're sitting amongst plenty and they're dying. And that's how I was before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was out there amongst plenty and I was dying. And they take them to a room marked heaven, and inside that room is the same thing. It's a banquet. Tables and tables of food, as much food as you could ever imagine, any kind of food you'd ever want. And the people in that room have those wooden spoons tied to their hands, too, and they can't quite get the food to their mouth. But the people in that room are full, and they're happy, and they're content. And the difference is that one man was taking a spoonful of food, and he was feeding the man across from him. And he was feeding the person next to him, and she was feeding somebody else. And that's how Alcoholics Anonymous works for me. I don't have my own answers. I think I'm here, and I have to let you feed me. And every once in a while, if I'm lucky, I get to give a spoonful of this thing to another alcoholic. And like I said earlier, you don't have to have 10 years or 5 years or 2 years. If you have one day, you have something to feed to the man or woman sitting next to you. If you have one day, you have something to feed to the man or woman coming through the door. When I was 4 days sober, an old man told me if I didn't drink, I wouldn't get drunk. And if I didn't get drunk, my life would get different. And he surely didn't lie to me. And the thing I end with, I always end with it. And I end with it because it's been my experience, and I pray God it's your experience. It's a line in chapter 5 that says, there is one who has all power. That one is God, when you find him now. Thank you.